I tell you what I'll do, because Alan's been hanging on there about the St Ives Railway and the book that he's written on. Let's just very quickly take his call. So you'll need your headphones on. My two guests, Shona Johnson, County Councillor, and Tim Phillips from Cast Iron. Good morning to you, Alan. What point do you want to make?
Well, my point, I wonder what investigation has been made in producing a road rail vehicle. One, it will keep the rail in place, and also it have that flexibility. Road rail vehicles were first run about 1936. And we've got that thing called Cambridge University and engineering there. What investigation have done? Because that would answer the queries for both sides.
Okay, let's put that. Who wants to go on that?
We haven't looked into that specifically. Obviously, it's an option if the railway stays in place. So that's another option we could look at. That option would, of course, be completely destroyed once the concrete is poured.
Yeah. Shona?
Well, essentially, a road rail vehicle is exactly what a guided bus is. It's one that runs on a guideway, except it's instead of it being an iron rail, it's a concrete rail.
Okay, we'll leave it there, Alan. Thank you very much for calling. Why do we have to guide it through an open countryside? I don't understand that.
There are a number of reasons. First of all, it means that we can get the cycleway alongside, and that's extremely important. People have been asking for a long time, can we have a good quality cycleway along the old railway line? The answer is, yes, we're going to provide one.
And it needs to be a guided bus to facilitate that?
You can get the guided buses closer together so that you've got more space to put the cycleway in. Second thing is, the advantage is that you get a much, much better quality of ride than you would on an ordinary road. And the third thing is that when you're coming into the stops, because we're going to have level access, you get a much better what's called docking, very technical term, but it means that the buses will stop in exactly the right place and you get straightforward access, so people with wheelchairs and buggies can go straight on without having to negotiate complicated steps.
One journey on the bus St Ives to Cambridge, how long?
One journey on the bus St Ives to Cambridge, St Ives to Cambridge Science Park will be 18 minutes.
And on the train?
Well, St Ives to Cambridge City Centre, according to the County Council's figures, will be 33 minutes, and by conventional bus currently is 30 minutes.
Okay. All right. Here's some emails. Let me just go through them all because we'll pick up certain points from them. John, first of all, from Long Stanton. I may be off beam, but I thought the reason for the guided bus or rail link was to remove amounts of traffic from the A14. Given that the big bendy bus will remove a significant amount of traffic from the A14, we don't need to build an expensive guideway. There'll be plenty of room on the A14. This will allow both options to run in parallel. We'll see which people like the best. I'm in favour of rail in that it will also allow freight to move on the line. The developments at Alconbury would seem a sensible idea. Quick comment on each of those. First,
well,
Tim?
Certainly. Chums is so hopelessly out of date now because of Alconbury and because of the extra platform at Stansted, and indeed because of the North Stowe development. The whole idea this thing is predicated on what Chums told us to do is just complete rubbish now.
Okay, sure.
Very quickly, when Chums' study took place, they knew there was going to be very significant development along the A14 corridor. They knew that there would be a freight terminal at Alconbury, even though that particular application was yet to be determined. Let's look at the freight issue, because Chums was very, very clear about freight, and it looked at how to get freight away from the A14 and away from public transport. And freight is already being delivered very successfully via the North London route. Longer term, the Cross Fen route will be upgraded. But really, do people in Histon and Impington and along the sort of King's Hedges area want freight trains rumbling past their doors overnight, all times of day? Very, very noisy. I don't think they'd really want that.
Will they do that?
Well, they're not very noisy these days. There's all sorts of developments going on. I mean, it's a very minor point.
Nobody, as far as I know, has done a study of the comparison between private traffic and commercial. I've done it because I travel the A14, and I just, roughly speaking, at the peak periods which cause the trouble, one in five vehicles are walloping great juggernauts. Now, that must be a proportion which isn't equaled anywhere else in the whole country. You can't just get all that off the road.
You're quite correct. 25% of the traffic on the A14 is freight traffic. We know that. The Chum study knew that. But I think the important thing is that upgrading the freight line takes freight away from competing with public transport corridors. If you don't have to have the same competition, then you've got a better, more reliable public transport system. And the freight companies are already running something like 40, 45 freight trains a day from the East Coast ports across to the Midlands. Each of those takes about 45 containers. I'm not suggesting every one of those containers would have gone on the A14, but a substantial number would have done. That is the position as it is at the moment. It is growing day by day. The rail freight industry is growing and growing in popularity. People are making that switch to using rail freight.
Well, interestingly,
that's why I need more lines,
isn't it? The one at Durft, Daventry one in Northamptonshire, I'm afraid is actually running out of customers. People are preferring to put their traffic back on the roads. That's a plain fact. It is not a success. It's becoming a failure.
But there are a lot of places where it is becoming a success.
And where
there
at?
More, and there are across to the Midlands, across to the north. You look at the rail freight industry, and a lot of companies, I believe even Asda, are turning to rail freight now.
Yeah, but the plain fact is that the one at Durft, as you know, Daventry.
You can always quote one example to
prove an
exception.
Well, it's the big one. It's the big one right at a massive centre of the country, which should be working, and it isn't properly. From Owen, we've got a lot of emails, a lot of comments. I'll try and do my best for everybody on this. No matter where the money's coming from, isn't it madness to opt to spend £86 million on a bus when an option exists to spend £35 million on the rail? Particularly when the bus option will be local, the rail option connects to the National Rail Network.
Can I just come back on that?
Yes, very quickly, yeah.
Can Tim tell me how it's going to connect at Huntingdon and when it will connect at Huntingdon into the National Rail Network?
Well, we know how it's going to connect because it was in the document that we provided to you. You didn't read that, I take it?
Yes, I did read that document. Could you explain?
By the way, I'd just like to say, if you read that in such detail, why did you tell your council members that we would be operating a volunteer operation?
Because that's the information you've given us.
No, this is the document here. You can look at it again if you like. If you could show me...
I'll hand it to you.
That's being passed over now.
If you can show me in the document where it says we're going to operate a volunteer operation...
Can you tell me how you're going to staff it, then?
It's all in our costings.
Would you like to explain to other people? Because you say you explained it to me, but would you like to explain it again?
Yes, because we've been to all the people that provide these services already, all up and down the country. We know how much it costs.
How much is it going to cost?
Oh, no. When you have put on the internet a costing that is about as broken down as, well, I don't know what. Item B3, permanent way and other supporting guiding structures, £30 million. Why haven't you broken that down?
I'm asking you how much your system's
going
to cost.
No, I'm asking you. I'm asking you why you told councillors in the members' briefing too that you put out only to councillors. Why did you say in that we were going to operate the volunteer railway?
Because that was what you said you were going to do.
No, it isn't.
Your costs have risen from £2 million to £30 million.
They have not,
Mrs. Johnston. And I think they've risen to £40 million.
Mrs. Johnston.
Only in terms of time. That one can be taken up again. And the, if you like, the boilings down of that argument could be presented to our listeners later. Just very quickly.
Well, I think it's very important.
Mrs. Johnston has
misled the councillors before the vote. This is extremely important. It's a matter of huge principle.
The vote was on Tuesday. Have you misled them?
No, I have not misled
them. You told them we were going to operate a volunteer railway. And we did.
That's what you told us you were going to do.
Excuse me.
Well, you're going to find it in there.
The document is here. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm standing by next to Mrs. Johnston. I have the document here, a costings document she had in detail.
Your costs have risen from 2 million.
Please, will you find me in this document where it says we're going to operate a volunteer railway?
Your costs have risen from 2 million to 30 million, and I'd like you to explain how they've done it.
Hold on.
How you've done it.
It doesn't say in there that you're going to do a volunteer railway.
No.
Okay, fair enough.
So that was what you said you were going to do. Can I just come back on one issue? How are you going to do or to run the level crossings?
They're going to be automatic level crossings.
From day one?
From day one.
From day one?
From day
one. Okay, and is that included in your costings?
Yes.
All right, okay, fine. And have you included the land costs?
Yes.
And how much is it? How much have you set aside?
I don't know the precise breakdown.
Fine, I do. I know the breakdown of our figures. Thank you.
All right. So you've got her costings you seem not to have.
I haven't got them to hand, no.
I think that says it all, doesn't it?
Well, let listeners decide on that one. That's for sure. Not me. I'm not deciding. Explanation, please, on who will be paying back the £32.5 million we Cambridge people will be borrowing. I won't go further on that because Simon said it enough. You've answered it in your own words on that. Can we clear up the money thing? This email saying, borrow, brackets, receive, verb, to get or receive something from someone with the intention of giving it back after a period of time. Could I borrow your bike from you next week? I think we've sort of covered that. Do you know what I mean?
This is where government finance is so incredibly complicated. Okay. And I think that the bottom line, the simple answer that is the most clearly understood answer is that there will be no direct cost to the Cambridge Council taxpayer.
Except, of course, for the £13 million that's been shifted to the integrated transport.
Hold on,
because if we bounce figures around at this moment, it's going to get more confusing, it won't get clearer. Will I ask the lady if there's any indirect costs? She's hiding behind words. Email from David. Are you hiding behind words?
There are no indirect costs. I'm not hiding behind words. Our accounting is absolutely
open. I have
open
the document here that proves otherwise.
All right, John in Lambeach, isn't this a short-term solution so the governments and county council can say they're thinking about transport when developing at North Stow at Lambeach / Oakington. Sally in Foxton wants to know who will own it.
That's something that we're actually going to be discussing as part of the procurement processes. It's later on in the timetable we have.
Right, we had got Alan waiting on line 8. He may have gone, actually. It was a question about the funding. He's gone on that one. Right, now, it's 3:30 to 12. We'll be having, you know, by hook or by crook, we'll be having the news at 12 o'clock. I think we'll have to return to this. I can see the lines are going mad. Whether it's worth us continuing after 12 or not, we will decide while the news is being read. Let's just get Alan then. He is in fact now available there, so let's take that. Alan, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Yeah, your question about the funding, if you would, please.
I've been listening with great interest to this, and I've heard figures mentioned of $65 million. I've also heard a figure of $86 million, and nobody seems to have identified where the $21 million difference is coming from. So I'd be very interested to know that.
Okay.
Very simply, if there is a major development going ahead, and there is at North Stow to the north of Cambridge, the Northern Fringe and the Clay Farm area to the south, that causes an impact on the services that are being provided, and that's in terms of education, health and housing and transport. And through what's called a Section 106 agreement, which we negotiate and which is very standard practice, they will contribute to the additional cost. So the balance will be funded through Section 106 funding, and nobody up till now has ever argued about that.
Well, Section 106 funding is, of course, available for all sorts of infrastructure, and the fact that the guarded bus scheme is escalating in cost in the way that it is means that more and more Section 106 is required. Now, Section 106 money can, for example, be used for schools. So, in fact, by going to a more and more expensive scheme, what we're actually doing is depriving other useful schemes, if you like, from Section 106 income.
That is absolutely not the case. Let me be clear about this. We know exactly what we want to provide in terms of infrastructure for all these developments, and there is sufficient Section 106 money. We are not taking money away from education. I'm afraid that's scaremongering by Tim Phillips.
But the more it costs, the more Section 106 you have to have,
and
since the government won't give you any more than
$65 million.
And there
is nothing to suggest that the government won't allow us to go back and seek additional funding if we need to.
I'm going to do a change.
There is, actually.
Just one moment.
There is. Well.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Shona. What we've decided we will do, there are a few things we need to look at further, and we will do that after 12. As far as possible, and it gets awfully annoying if you've got complicated facts and figures and costings at your fingertips, to have somebody like myself say, no, let's boil it down to basics. But life essentially does that in the end, and we'll see if we cannot just once again go through that process after the news at 12. Now, if you've got any further questions to be put, please make them as quick as possible, and you can call us 08459 25 2000. Once again, the texting number is 077 86 20 1960, and the email steve.riches, R-I-C-H-E-S, at bbc.co.uk. Let me just... one coming in from... It says, Richard from Histon wants to know if the recent proposed council tax increases are anything to do with it.
No, not at all.
No connection at all.
No connection at all, no.
So in the studio with me, Shona Johnston, who's the county councillor and also the cabinet member, who, with one of her responsibilities, is for transport. And really they're saying now that it's the guided bus scheme, it's government funded, going from memory, £32.5 million immediately, £32.5 million, which isn't good. Seemingly is borrowed but isn't, right? Your overall costings,
let's just call it £65 million. Okay. That's the easiest way to describe it.
So you're saying £86.4 million will do the whole job by 2007. Tim, you're saying as far as the rail link is concerned, £30 million will do it by 2006. But you did go a bit on the wobble when asked for some more, if you like, in-depth facts and figures, and perhaps we should ask you that after the news.